It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 166 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a great interview with a new talent in the comics industry. Joseph Bradford has created his first comic book, and he'll pronounce the name. It consists of two Latin words that I like the way he pronounces better than I do. So you're going to want to listen to that and find out what the name is. It's from TikiGodComics.com. And he talks about how the comic came to be and what the process was like to develop this comic, as well as things that take place within the book itself. So there's a lot of good information and entertaining conversation that we have, so I'm sure you're going to want to listen. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I'm talking today with Joe Bradford, one of the creators of a brand new comic, and I like the way you pronounce it. So, Joe, why don't you go ahead and pronounce it?
Angeli Arbitrium.
Yeah, that's it. Just came out recently. I saw you at Shock Pop Comic Con down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and you had this great booth, and you have a website that just came up before that convention started. And why don't you, while we're talking about that, why don't you give out the name of your website?
It's TikiGodComics.com.
Right.
We just launched last Thursday. We're very excited about it. The whole company is basically launching at Shock Pop. Was our big goal was to put everything out right there.
Now, you picked an interesting place to do that because in this part of the country, there are a lot of comic creators who are making their own comics. You probably noticed there was like Think Alike Productions was down there, Dark Side Global. There's all different ones and all different kinds of people. And there was more than just them around who are comics creators. And so it's kind of a comics hub. So you're from New York, aren't you?
Yeah, I live in New York. I'm actually from Oregon originally, but settled in New York.
Okay. Because, yeah, it's an interesting place to be, is to go down to there because all this comics creation is going on down there, and that's a good place to go and launch your comic.
It felt right. They're launching their new convention. Mm-hmm. I also honestly had a place to stay that was cheap, and you know, that kind of added a bit to it, and we're a brand new company, so we are fiscally minded a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it just felt like they were starting out, we're starting out. It felt like the right place to be.
Well, that's good. And it went pretty well. I thought that your booth was great. I thought the display you had was really good. You had a little iPad that allowed you to log in and sign up on your mailing list and things like that. The great thing that how this interview came to be was you guys sent out an email. I'd given my card and signed up for it, and I got this email. And I thought, man, this might be a good time to get on the ground floor with this comic and talk to one of the creators about it. So that's how I responded and how this interview came to be for those people who think that everybody just sort of appears and it doesn't take any work, that these interviews just sort of roll in, just like you did when you started your comic. You got to kind of hunt down people to be able to chat with them, and I look for quality stuff, and I enjoyed your book very much, and that was one of the reasons I wanted to talk with
you.
Yeah, it was a good start, and we'll get into some of the things about it because I'm just kind of fascinated. Now, you mentioned the name of the comic. What does the name actually mean to you, or how should readers take it? You know, when we translate that into English, what does that mean?
It means Angel's Choice. The original name of the book was The Chosen. Mm-hmm. And of course, that name had been taken by a bunch of different people. Mm-hmm. And so we started like playing with the idea of the name and trying to figure out how we could get across that she is choosing him. And we figured, well, let's go with Latin, you know, because it fits the idea of the angel and all that. And so that's where the name came from.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've got to ask, because there seem to be more and more now because the technology is available to be able to create comics. Mm-hmm. How long have you been bringing this to fruition? You mean, how did the concept start? How did you guys get together and do this? What was the story behind how this comic came to be?
the story's been floating around my head for years. I've probably been playing with it for about 5 years. I had written it as a graphic novel at first, and then I had some friends read it, and they're like, you know, you really should get into it later in the story. I've been wanting to do it for a long time, and my life now is at this point where I want to create something as opposed to just doing other people's art, which is what I do professionally right now. And so I went to San Diego Comic-Con last year, and I was talking to some of the other writers who were there and some of the artists I really respect, and I started asking them, how do I go about this? How do I meet an artist? How do I find an artist? I've been trying to find collaborators and people, you know, who are willing to work with me, and that's hard to do. And they kind of started to say to me, you know, you probably got to pay someone. And so I went on digital webbing. I figured out my budget, and I found Kay through that. I had a lot of other artists, and his art just really spoke to me, and it said this was the comic. So
how long did it take once you found Kay? How long did it take to get the pages done, you know, to get the concept together, get it printed? Because you had copies at the convention, which was great. So how long did it take once the pieces started to fall into place?
Kay and I started working on it in about September is when, you know, we started going back and forth. And we weren't really in a rush until I decided that we needed an end date. We needed, like, a focus. And so that became Shock Pop. Mm-hmm. I think the artwork was done about December. And we started looking at it a little bit and doing some edits, some small edits. And then by January 1st, it was ready to go to print. And, you know, I rushed some copies to get down to Florida. And it was ready by the time we were there.
Great. What was your experience? Because you being there, and was this your first time at a convention and being on that side of the table?
It was. I never thought that I could sell something in a way. And for this, you know, I had such passion behind it. I really care about this project. So to be able to talk to people about it and get the positive reinforcement that I did from people was great. It was such a, you know, nice experience. I learned a lot about it and what people want. A lot of people wanted more than just a single issue. They wanted a full arc. So I think next time we go to a Comic-Con, we're going to try and have a 3-issue trade ready to go. At that point.
Now, I want to get into the specifics of the book, but you bring up an interesting point. You know, if somebody wants to get a hold of the comic, how do they do that? They go through your website?
They can go through our website. On TeakGodComics.com, we have links to the iTunes and Amazon Kindle website that you can download the comic to. We're working on Comixology right now. We're in their proofreading process. So hopefully that'll be soon.
Because Comixology seems to be a hub where people go to buy comics digitally. But that doesn't mean that iTunes and Amazon aren't good. They are good, but just kind of feel like Comixology is the big dog in that fight. You know, and so
For sure.
So getting there is great. Did you find it difficult to get on iTunes and Amazon, or were they much easier than Comixology, and that's why that happened first?
Yeah, I mean, they don't have any kind of standards in a way. I found it the difficult part. I mean, they do have standards, but it was the standards were more technical than creative in a way. I had to change file sizes and all that, and that was a learning process in itself. But with Comixology, they want a quality comic. You can't just be anybody and throw a comic up there. So I'm actually okay with that. So when I do finally get approved, I know I'm in good company, and I think that's a good standard. So many people are trying to write comics right now. They have a 6-week backlog, so it's just the waiting process.
They have a thing now that if you're a brand new comic that's never been done before, there's a thing that you program you apply to, and you go through that. I interviewed somebody else who had gone through that whole process, and his book got onto Comixology, and he found it a huge boon because a lot of people actually started buying the book through Comixology that they didn't have enough of an outgo to make it really profitable until it hit Comixology. So that's kind of why I'm encouraging that, because Comixology is just that place.
Yeah, it's definitely something we as a company really want to focus on. Again, it's a huge learning process for us, and we are still getting our feet under us and figuring out the timetables and how fast we need to get things out to keep a schedule going. So we're brand new. We're definitely freshmen on the scene, and we're just trying to figure it out and get it out there.
Now, what about print copies? Are you going to make print copies for sale, or are you going to stick to digital?
I think our business model right now is digital. I think as a comic book collector, as someone who loves comics, I understand how great it is to have an actual paper copy in your hand. I definitely think any Comic-Con we go to, we're going to have either trade paperbacks or issues available. But I think digital is the way that we're going right now. And I honestly love reading comics on my iPad. I think the colors pop Everything is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And as someone, I used to travel for a living all the time, and it was the only way I could travel and keep my comics with me. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense. I think it's the way to go. But then at the same time, I live in New York, so I go to Midtown Comics all the time. And, mm-hmm. you know, I have to go in there and I get a couple copies here and there.
Because, mm-hmm. of course, what you're doing is, you know, should this thing take off and you get to be a well-known name and this be a big book, you know, any paper copies are probably going to be very collectible.
Yeah.
You know,
as
we get down the road, because we'll see about that. But whenever you're starting out, you've got to reach the most people you can. And so having paper copies at a convention is a smart idea, I have to say, because there was a lot of people coming around, coming up to see your product. And that's because you had paper copies to sell. And I think you're right that when you go to conventions and stuff like that, having paper editions are going to be very helpful to you.
Oh, I think it's key at a convention. I think people come to a convention to get something physical and also to have that tangible experience of talking to a creator mm-hmm. and having the creator sign their work. You know I definitely do when I go and get art from artists or things like that. So mm-hmm. definitely.
Now, you were there. You've got a co-founder for your company. Was he there too? Because mm-hmm. I didn't see him. I talked to you when I was there. Of course, I'm going mm-hmm. around looking for people for my podcast, so I, you know, mm-hmm. people always funnel the talent right at me. Usually, when that guy, what was? Because Scott Lisinski is the guy's name.
Yeah, Scott.
So he was there as well.
He was there as well. Yeah. He's my best friend, one of my oldest friends, and really, he used to do, or he still does, production for large corporate events. And so, when I was starting writing and looking at publishing, I asked him if he wanted to help me work on this convention and figure out how to do this convention correctly. And you know, I was asking his advice, and he was intrigued with the whole thing, and he's kind of looking for a new thing to do. And you know, I asked if he wanted to be a part of it, and so he's on board completely, and helping me do the business side that I am very, very green with.
Okay.
And helping me keep track of all that kind of stuff as well.
Is he a comics guy, a comics reader like you are?
He is not as much of a comics reader as I am. Okay. I'm pushing books at him all the time. I'm like, here, read this. This is good. Read this. So.
Well, he'll probably understand the industry better if you can kind of give him some samples of what to look at and understand.
For sure.
So that's a good thing. So that's great. Now, one other question before we actually get into the content was that you chose to go with the color cover, obviously, but your content inside is black and white. Now, obviously, there's a cost savings there, but there's there's also an artistic end to having a black and white comic. Was that artistically what you chose? Did the cost have a big influence on going that route? What was it that made you choose a black and white comic?
I think the cost was definitely the first thing that impacted that choice. It was, you know, because it was cost prohibitive. Honestly, I had a $50 limit on what I could pay for a page, and that was my budget, and that was not going to get me color. So when I was choosing Kay, I was looking at his black and white stuff, and he had done a lot of black and white. And that is kind of what jumped out at me, as he will be able to nail this black and white. And he actually wanted to do color. We had talked after he did the first issue. He's like, can we look at color? I go, no. Because I looked at the comic after he did it, the first issue is so beautiful in black and white, and I think it fits the story so well. And I was like, nope, you nailed it. It's perfect. I think we just keep going with that.
Well, you've read Bone by Jeff Smith, though, right?
I have, yeah.
Okay. You know that he started putting out later, you know, after the black and white, they made just about every edition possible. They had like a phone book edition that had just about every book in it, and it was hard to read. And then they had all the individual issues and trades and all the things. After all those things came out, he went back and did hardcovers in which they had gone back and colored the issues.
Wow.
And I actually bought a bunch of those because I loved the look of the color so much. I loved the black and white. The story was compelling. And his artwork is good. But the thing was, to have it in color was kind of a draw. And so there's several versions. If you go back and you can find, they not only released them in hardcover, but they released them in trade as well.
Wow. All
so,
right.
You know, something, if you know, again, it's just a thought that somewhere down the pike you might change your mind and decide to go back and color it, but so that it's certainly possible to do that. The nice thing about black and white is you can always go back later and fill in color if you decide to do
that. Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, I like that, and I just thought, every time I see black and white now, I think, you know, that could go color pretty easily.
You know, actually, it's funny. I do photography on the side just for fun as a hobby, and everything I do is black and white, and I think it speaks to me and my artistic aesthetic is that I enjoy black and white. I love the drama of it. I love the there's something about a beautiful black and white photo that really speaks to me, and I feel that Kay nailed that in the art, you know, of the comic. It's just beautiful black and white art.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, black and white, it sort of comes and goes in, as far as the comics industry goes. You know, the Turtles, of course, were black and white, and we had all other things. And sometimes they'll be black and white for a while, and they'll go away for a while, and they'll come back. So, you know, you can't rule out black and white being a popular thing because, you know, there was that time when it had to be black and white in order to be popular, and then it stopped that. And then went back. And so back and forth we go as far as black and white goes. It really, I think, depends on the story you're telling. And you're right, the black and white does fit the story very well, what you're doing. So I do agree that black and white was a good choice for, as far as creatively going, you know, forward with the story.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I like that. Yeah. Let me dive into, because I want to get into some of the story in there. Of course, by the name and by the cover, you can obviously tell there's an angel involved.
Mm-hmm.
And she is, let's just say that things happen in the beginning of the book. It's sort of a Howard Chaykin way of telling the story. We get dropped into the middle. Something's obviously happened, and things are going on as a result of that. But we don't know exactly what those are at this point. But that's a good way to do it. And what you do is, it's like, I always like to tell the story. I read a Nancy Drew book. And I opened up the book, and the first line said, he couldn't believe the car was headed straight for him.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing I knew was I was 20 pages in reading, wait a minute, I didn't mean to read this book. But, you know, that whole thing shocked me so much, and I had to go and find out what this was all about. And see, what you're doing in the book, too, is, you know, the book starts out, and it's not really spoilery to say that, you know, here comes this, there's a Mustang, obviously, going along. And there's a gentleman and a lady sitting in there, and she says to him, which tells us something's happened before, that went well, she goes, which means it probably didn't.
It
was going. And as they're going along, they start talking to each other. His name is James, and he's got a cowboy hat and stuff on. Are we at some point going to find out what happened by that point, or is that kind of stuff not relevant to the story moving forward?
I think you'll get a general idea of what he's doing. It comes out, it gets fleshed out a little bit more in issue two about what James is about and his origin. Yeah, it really is what happens going forward that's more important, and what he's been doing and honestly, who he's been upsetting becomes relevant to the story going on. So you get a little bit of that backstory as we go.
Now, who is James as far as, you know, let's say a TV guide version or something that, you know, here's this character and, you know, he's obviously, he wears like a cowboy hat and stuff like that. And he's obviously, he's a trouble magnet, seems like. What should we know about James getting into this thing? What would draw people to read the comic to know about James?
James, he's a troubled individual. He's had a very, very rough life. He is, as the angel will say, a diamond in the rough. She chose him for a reason, and she chose him because she's trying to prove her point about humanity and how humanity can be redeemed and saved and how much compassion really there is in humanity.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, because he does, as the story goes along, and not to give out spoilers and stuff, but there's someone else that comes into the story and attracts James's attention. Mm-hmm. And this kid basically trying to grow up, he runs into people who don't take kindly to him or don't like him very much. And James sees, and there's this wonderful panel where they're kind of taking out their frustrations on this kid.
Mm-hmm.
And the angel is talking to James and saying, well, you know, your choice. What do we do? Do we help him or do we not? And then we see all this stuff goes on, and you can just sense there's James kind of with the hat with like a shadow over his face. And he goes, we help the boy. And you can just tell that there's anger and there's unhappiness about what's going on. You know, and then the angel goes, agreed. And I love that was a real pivotal point in the book for me, because you could tell what was going on. The art and the words really worked together to give us a sense of what James and the angel were going to be doing and how they felt about what was going on. So I thought that was very well done.
Yeah, I love that panel where James decides to help the boy and the angel says agreed. That's one of my favorite panels in the book. I think Kay nailed it, you know, and you know, even on James's face, you can tell the determination that this is the right choice. Mm-hmm. And that panel also, you know, that whole scene goes to the angel proving that James has such good in him and the right choice he's making.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it turned out, yeah, he nailed it. Yeah. Every time I look at the comic, you know, he brought out things that I wrote it in a not a Marvel way. I wrote it like a screenplay, you know, what I saw and how I wrote it and what Kay took from that and transformed into it, I think was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Very well done. And of course, the angel, I read through a couple of times just to see if we ever find out what her name is. And I don't think I see it in this book. I don't think we find out what her name is. Okay, yeah, because I was looking at it going, she refers to him as James or Cowboy a lot during the book, but we never find out what her name is. And another interesting thing about her, too, is the fact that nobody seems to be able to see her except for James until the boy enters the picture. And that really piqued my interest tremendously, because all of a sudden there's some similarity that's taking place between James and the boy. And I just thought that was such a great little dramatic moment when he realizes that the boy can see the angel, then his opinion of the boy changes, and you can see how he relates to that. So that was another, these things happen right after each other, so that's a real pivotal part of the book. I just thought that was such a great idea to do that. When you conceived the story, was that the way you had it when you first wrote this first issue or got this concept together, was that he'd be able to see her?
Yeah, Sammy was always going to be able to see her. Mm-hmm. And it's a surprise to her as well, mm-hmm. and James as well, that he can see her. Mm-hmm. And it becomes important later. It speaks to the boy and who and what the boy is, mm-hmm. and what he represents.
Mm-hmm. Now, another thing I really enjoyed about the comic is you have several other characters coming around, supporting characters, and there's the lady in the diner. And mm-hmm. what the angel says about her, about, you know, it expresses sympathy for her. And, you know, the great thing about that is she's able to give us background of the character, which we need in order to understand them and what's going on all around them. She's able to do that. So she's going to be a great provider of information along these things. So I thought you did a great job with that, too. I thought knowing what we did about the characters fleshes out what's going on in the whole place. We understand who's doing what, when, and why a lot better. So I like that a lot.
No, thank you. The angel, she sees definitely much more than anyone else in the book and is able to give you a little bit of backstory, but I try very hard not to do too much narration, I guess, mm-hmm. too much blatant, this is this person, this is what they do. Mm-hmm. I was trying to make it integrate into the story.
Mm-hmm. So you bring up a good point, though, is that a lot of the times you're letting the visuals doing the talking. There's dialogue going on and things happening, but it's not too much, because, you know, sometimes I pick up a comic and I see these massive word balloons, the old talking, mm-hmm. the talking head thing. And I look at it and I'm going like, man, I don't want to read all that text. And it's sure. You kind of hope that visually you'll pick up what's going on as you go along and do it. And one of the things I enjoyed about the book, too, as you're pointing out, is that you limit the text to important stuff. When things happen, this verbalization or words going on, they're important to read, and there's not an overabundance of it. So I thought that was very professional in the book, and it really drew me into the story to be able to see what was going on instead of having to be told.
Yeah, I listened to a podcast called Writing Excuses by Brandon Sanderson, who's a fantasy author, mm-hmm. does it, and also some interviews with Patrick Rothfuss, another fantasy author, mm-hmm. and they talk about editing themselves and how they edit. They write the book, and they write it with what I call verbal diarrhea. You know, you spit it out. You get everything out, mm-hmm. you put it out on the page, and then you go back and you go through it and you chop. Mm-hmm. And even after I got the final proofs from Kay and DeCara, I started looking at the dialogue. I'm like, nope, we should cut some of that. It's too much, too much, too much. And I really had to edit myself and be pretty just like, I don't need that. It's unnecessary. Mm-hmm. Kay has made the visual. It tells the story. And comics are a visual medium. They're mm-hmm. like a screenplay, too, like a movie. You need to tell the story with visuals to keep the audience entertained.
It's too true. Of course, television, the phrase is, you know, show us, don't tell us. And yeah. That's what your book is doing. You're picking up on that thing. And see, that to me is a very strong storytelling point. You've got to be able to care about the characters. And if all they do is chat and talk, you can't really get into it. But by the end of the book, James to me is a very vibrant, alive character. You know, he lives and breathes to me because of all the things that are going on. And of course, we won't spoil the end of the book, but something really dramatic happens with James towards the end of the book. And, mm-hmm. you know, maybe going like, I got to see the next issue. You know, very nicely done, because that's the kind of stuff we need. We need storytelling that pulls us along. You can't live without seeing what's going to happen next. And I really got that from your book, and I really think that that was a well-done thing. That you are facing a real challenge in a first issue. You have got to somehow got to land on in such a place that the people who are reading it care about the characters and enjoy the artwork and want to come back for a second issue.
You know? Thank you.
And I think you did that extremely well. I liked it real well.
I think I go with, as I was writing it, and I'm working on another book with a friend of mine right now, and he's writing it as a story I hadn't, and I told him, I go, look, every issue needs to Dan Brown at the end. You know, I don't know if you've ever read Dan Brown books, but end of every chapter, you can't put it down because he leaves everything on a cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you necessarily need to leave on a cliffhanger, but you have to leave with a question. Mm-hmm. And especially in comic books, you have 22, 24 pages in a comic to land on a question. Mm-hmm. And so I always try and, you know, while I'm writing the next issue, I'm thinking, what is the question I want to leave with when we're done?
Mm-hmm. Now, there's one other theme that's going on in the book, and I'm going to be kind of curious to see how you deal with this as we go forward. And it has to do with drugs being involved with certain things, mm-hmm. with what they call fate, F-E-I-T. I don't know what that, is that a real thing, or is this something you made up for the book? Okay.
No, it's a drug I came up with the book. The boy's mom is addicted to fate, and it adds to where we're going with the book and what the final end game of the book is and how fate affects humanity in a way and what its specific drug, but drugs in general, are doing to people. And yeah, it goes from there. I don't want to spoil too much.
Don't spoil it. I would much rather read the book. I don't mind teases. What I don't like are spoils. You know, well, in such and such a book, such and such happens. No, don't tell me that because I want to read the story. So yeah. I always like that. So I think you're doing a good job. What's funny to me, of course, as being a editor, proofreader type person, it's called Fate, but it's spelled F-E-I-T in the book, which I loved. You know, I thought that was, I had to know how it was pronounced because, of course, fate being, you know, you're saying that drugs impose a fate on people by doing the F-A-T-E word. And it's so good. There's a lot of literate things going on in this book. You know, a lot of people always say, well, comics are for kids and they're not very, you know, enlightening and stuff. But you've chosen like a literate name for the book, and you're doing a lot of themes and subjects that are important to us to understand, and like the calling it that and yet spelling it a different name is a very positive way to go about that, because we get drawn in to understand with it. Because I saw that, I said it's got to be pronounced fate, which of course made me think of F-A-T-E. So that was another nice little thing I thought that was in the book, was to do those kinds of things.
I think comics right now have such an opportunity to tell such stories that are important to the time. I've been reading Trees and East vs. West, and those books, they speak to me so much, and they're, you know, they're dark, but they're talking about the human condition. And I think that comics right now are having such a renaissance and such a, you know, an ability to reach so many people and tell so many different stories. And yes, you can look at them as the funny books and kids books, but the people who actually take it seriously and are willing to open their minds and read it, I think you have such an opportunity to tell such a great story and really get ideas out there.
Mm-hmm. And see, what you're saying is true, that those comic books, and there are places for children's books. Books and children's stories and things like that in comics. Yeah. So there's no point in limiting, saying comics are just one kind of storytelling. There's perfectly good room in there for your kind of storytelling, which drew me as an adult in, and there's still also things for like children's literature type of things to happen.
And Tiki God Comics, we're definitely going that route also. We have our other book coming out this summer, Ellie Moonbeard and the Seekers of Shine. And that book, you know, we're going with the Pixar model there. We really want it to be something that, as a dad or a mom who loves comic books and you want to share that with your kid, this is a book that you're going to enjoy and the kids are going to enjoy too.
All ages kind of thing.
Yeah, an all ages kind of thing. But really, we don't want it to be limited to young adult, or we want it to be across the board.
Well, I'm really looking forward to that. I'm going to need to see these kinds of things. And going forward, I want to keep track and keep an ear to the ground, listening to what you're doing and keeping up with your product, because I really like it real well.
Thank you very much.
So as far as Angelae Arbitrium, do we know when issue 2 is going to hit out? As far as, do you have it on the schedule, or is it when it's done and ready, it'll be out?
It's going to be done. We're looking at a March 12th release date on iTunes and Amazon.
Okay.
And then Comixology to follow. I just actually read the last proof yesterday, and I sent my final notes to Kay. So that's going to be coming through this week, and I'm going to be changing the format so it fits on iTunes and Kindle and sending it out to Comixology. And I'm hoping with Comixology, once the first book is out, that they will streamline the process a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Once they get to know you, they'll probably
be an approved author.
Yeah.
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be good. Now, the second book you're mentioning, do you have a release date in mind for that one?
We don't have a solid one. It's going to be end of summer.
Okay.
I'm still working on the script, and we have some other ideas coming along with that one, too. But we're very excited about it. We got Nico Salma He's going to do the art for it, and he's fantastic. And it's really interesting to work with a different artist. I'm excited to work with someone else. And that one is going to be in color. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a new thing for us, too.
Very good. And that'll be digital also?
That'll be digital. Honestly, I think we're looking at a New York Comic Con release if we can get a booth. And we're working very hard to get a booth. And that is hopefully when it'll come out. And we'll probably have a 3-issue trade paperback is our goal for New York Comic Con for the first 3 issues of that book. And so everybody can get a real good feel for it, and hopefully they'll enjoy it.
I think that's a good move, because whenever I've gone to New York Comic Con, I've run into people making comics, and some of them for the first time. And I have encountered companies I never heard of before there. There's a company called Awesome Comics, OSSM Comics. Saw them up there and read some of their stuff. There's a guy who does a book called Legend of the Montemagi that I really liked, very diverse comic, which I enjoyed very much. So yeah, it's a great move you're making to go to New York, from, in my opinion, to be able to get there and get your name out with those kinds of things. So I think you guys are making a lot of smart moves, sounds like to me.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really excited. Living in New York, I really want to do that Comic-Con. That's the one that we really are pushing for.
Well, you know, of course, that's now bigger than San Diego as far as attendance.
I know. It's huge. It's huge. I did both last year. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, actually, I like New York better. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, I've been to San Diego also. It wasn't this. I did go in the same year one time. And I went to San Diego, and the problem was things are spread out so far across the downtown San Diego that you'd be walking and walking. You can't have two things right next to each other if they're, you know, like a mile away from each other. You can't possibly get from one to the other. So New York, everything is nice and compact in that nice building. So it's excellent. Just a much better setup.
Much easier to get to also.
Yeah. And for those of us on the East Coast, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I've got one more question for you. I've got to ask, because there are, as time goes along, I'm meeting more and more people who are creating comics. Has it been a real fulfilling experience for you to when you see it from the page comes to you after, you know, you've scripted it, you've dialogued the whole business, you give it to Kay, it comes back, you get to read it, and then when you go to the convention, you've got paper copies like to sell to people? How did that feel for you as a creator to have that happen?
It's amazing. I mean, it really is. I mean, I've been reading comics since I was 12 years old. I remember my first comic was the Batman movie graphic novel.
Oh, really?
And from there I started, you know, reading all sorts of stuff. I love Spider-Man, I loved X-Men, I love Batman, and reading all that. And then I kind of fell away from it for a while, but I was writing the whole time. You know, I was writing, trying to write screenplays, trying to write novels, trying to write all this stuff. And then I started getting into comics again, and I went through a rough time in my life, and comics were really there. You know, I could start reading them again and really getting into them and enjoying them. And then through that rough time, I decided, I'm like, I want to create something. I want to do something. And to write this and have it, you know, and go to San Diego and decide, I got to do this on my own. I can't wait for someone else to say they want to do it with me. I just need to do it. And to have it finished and done and have people enjoy it, it's so fulfilling. It's so, you know, I feel like I have done something and created something. And my cousin said to me, she was like, she goes, you know, it's great. She hears about people who want to do things and want to try things. And she was like, she goes, I'm so proud of you because you actually just did it. You didn't wait for anybody. And it is such a sense of accomplishment. And, you know, and definitely there's the artistic part of me that is scared and worried that people are not going to, you know, I'm like, you know, I left the con on Sunday. We were done, and Monday we were hanging out in Florida for a day, and nobody was responding. I hadn't seen any Facebook likes or anything like that. And I'm like, oh, everybody hates it. This is the first, I'm like, everybody hates it. And you know, hear your feedback. And I've also got some other feedback from people that they really enjoyed it. And it's great. I mean, I feel like I have put something out into the world, and I'm so happy to have done that.
Well, keep at it, because I really liked what I've read, and I'm looking forward to what else you're going to do in the future. So I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to follow. It sounds like the Tiki Gods Comics website is a place to go for us to, if we want to keep track of what you're doing.
It really is, yeah.
And so I'm going to keep my ear to that place. I'm going to be watching and seeing what you do moving forward. Any other projects that you're going to be working on that we should be aware of besides these two good things? Do you do other stuff as well? You're kind of focusing on these right now.
I'm focusing on those right now, and yeah, that's about it for the moment. I have another book in line. I don't really want to spill it too much yet, but it'll be coming out hopefully in the fall. that I'm actually editing, that a buddy of mine and I came up with a story, and I'm editing it for him, and it's his first comic. He's never written a comic before, and Tiki God is going to help him do that. We're going to write it and try and find an artist for him, and so we're very excited about that one, too.
Great. Well, congratulations on getting that accomplished and making this happen, because you're right. A lot of people would like to do that. I've seen Kickstarter things where people get up there and say, hey, give me money and I'll make a comic.
Yeah.
You know, kind of stuff. And, you know, how can we ever know that this guy, when he gets the money, is ever going to make a comic out of it? So you've actually done it. And that is something you should be very proud of. And a good product, too. So I'm really looking forward to as things you go. And I wish you a whole lot of success. And keep it up.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy. And I can't do that as Bruce Wayne, as a man. From flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com. For this week. Be sure to be back next time when I'll have another great interview with yet another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.